Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Jaguars OTAs continue today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank. As today, Tony, we'll catch up with Jags past and present. Maurice Williams, one of the all-time leaders in games played in Jaguar history as an offensive lineman, only played here in Jacksonville in his NFL career. He's got some stuff going on. He's got an event with his foundation. We're going to talk about that, talk about, you know, looking back through the window of time into Maurice's playing days and his thoughts on the offensive line play, among other things, here with the current-day Jacksonville Jaguars. And then Paul Posluszny will join us, scheduled to at least about an hour and 30 minutes from now. But, you know, I mentioned it with Prosser there at the top of the program. Just kind of, you know, you hear that about Luke Bowenko yesterday. He's a little bit out of sight, out of mind, right? You know, you thought 2 years ago this guy may be the center of the future or what have you, and it hasn't gone that direction right now. They don't have a lot of quality depth of guys that have snapped the football on the offensive line before. Luke Bowenko's a guy that at least you'd feel comfortable with having. I don't know what the timetable is going to be on his return, but anytime you're talking about any kind of a hip injury, labrum, or otherwise, something to certainly monitor. And, you know, maybe I was a little hasty in my evaluation of Luke Bowenko and his impact on this football team.
I mean, maybe. We'll see. Look, he obviously was a guy that they started moving around on the interior of that line last year when they brought in Wisniewski to be the center in free agency. So it kind of left Bowenko without a true position, and he needed to provide some kind of versatility if he was going to remain on this team. Now, I think Mackenzie Bernardo has taken snaps at center in the league. I'm not sure on that. I know at least Pro Football Reference lists him as a center slash guard in 2012 with Dallas, which makes me assume that he at least took some snaps as a center
right
with the team that year. So they may have somebody else that has done that before. I don't know how much he did that in the 2012 season. He started all 16 games for Dallas that year, so he may have got moved around a little bit. But look, Bowenko is still a young player. He played okay his 1 year as a center for this team. The offensive and defensive lines right now feel like numbers games for this team, and it started with OTAs yesterday with Jokel moving around a little bit to guard during the first real OTA of the year and seeing what he's got there too, just in case it doesn't work for him at left tackle and he gets beat out by Beachum. The team is trying some different things there. They're moving Ryan Davis to the auto position so that he can have some more versatility. And I've thought since the draft, what is Ryan Davis for this football team? I mean, what is he right now? What is his role going to be? If they want Sheldon Day on the field on third down, he's not playing defensive end, and that's where Ryan Davis was his best,
right?
Was at that interior spot. So what is Ryan Davis for this football team right now? So they move him to the auto position. He's still a really good special teams player. I'm curious to see how they're going to play with all these numbers right now on both lines of scrimmage, because it is a juggling act for this football team.
It's going to be tough to get snaps at the auto position, right? I mean, you got Dan Scuda, who's got experience there, and they've already talked about wanting to use him as a third down pass rusher. You've got Miles Jack coming in. You know they've got to get him on the field in some capacity. So, hey, look, that's good to have competition where you don't know where you, a guy that a couple of seasons ago, people were clamoring to see more Ryan Davis. Last season, people were clamoring to see more Ryan Davis, and he may have a tough time getting on the field. That means the overall level of talent on this roster is improving. And the thing about Bernardo, too, let's say he does have that center experience, and that's the next guy you'd feel comfortable with if something were to happen at that position. What if he wins the left guard spot? You know, look, you shuffle offensive lines all the time in the National Football League, but it's not ideal. You don't want to take a guy away from another position and then necessarily weaken two spots, right? You become the backup at center, and then somebody who wasn't your equal because you won the starting job takes that left guard spot. So you're kind of weakening two positions at one point in time if he were to win the left guard spot under that kind of scenario. But what it did was prompt the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. When you look at the roster right now, who is the most indispensable backup player, who you would deem a backup player? I know a lot of people are going to say one of the running backs. I kind of look at Yeldon and Ivory as co-starters. That's the way I look at them. But you're certainly free to name one of those guys if you choose to, as whoever you think is going to win the starting job, go with the other guy if that's your option. But who is the most indispensable guy that's not in your mind, slated to start for this football team this year. We'll get into that throughout the course of the day. As I mentioned, coming up, Maurice Williams. I love Mo. He's a good dude. He's always just been a solid character guy. Another guy that has made Jacksonville his home. Longtime Jacksonville Jaguar. Never took a snap with any other organization in the NFL. He's going to join us in studio coming up in just a few minutes. Talk about what his foundation's got going on. We'll talk about his playing days and his thoughts on the current state of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Later on, as I mentioned, Paul Posluszny, Jaguars middle linebacker. Also, later this week, we've got it locked in. We'll have the head coach, Gus Bradley, joining us on one of the broadcasts later on this week. So we'll tell you about that at the appropriate time. If you want to get in today with Mo or anybody else, 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the text line. Excuse me, the text line driven by Duval Ford. Excuse our dust situation going on right now here at Everbank. Although the noise factor has been diminished, I appreciate that. They had the concrete mixer out front yesterday, just pouring that stuff.
Yes, they did.
Up into the club seat level. So it's all happening here, getting ready for opening day 2016. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Glad you're along with us. Get in on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. Jaguars Today Facebook page open for business. The text line, the phone lines, it's all there for you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go. Jaguars Today on this Tuesday morning live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. And joined in studio, I think on this program at least, for the first time, by Maurice Williams, former Jaguar offensive lineman. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks for having me on the show today.
You're one of these former player skinny guys now, you know, which is smart on your part.
It was. I spent a lot of my years being 320, 315 plus. You said, you know what? I'm going to make it a little easier on my knees now, get some of the weight off, and I'm just having fun working out with my family.
Rocking the Michigan Wolverine cap, as I would expect you would, man. I mean, you've got the radio outfit on. He's got the cargo shorts and a T-shirt.
Oh, yeah, he knows what's up.
He know, right. You look like you could be in our business. everything good, man. I mean, it's a great career for you here. And I love the fact that you're one of these guys that, A, never took a snap with another organization, and, B, decided to make this your home as well.
I have. Jacksonville's been great to me. Things are going really well. Raising my family here, I have four boys, and I've been married for about 12 years, so it's things are going really well.
Four boys. Are they all? You got your own offensive line growing or what?
Well, my oldest doesn't want to play offensive line. He thinks it's offense almost.
There you go.
He wants to be a quarterback, running back, and he's pretty athletic.
He's probably pretty smart, too, because those quarterbacks make a smidge more than the offensive linemen, although the tackles do pretty well these days
as
well.
They do all right,
well.
Yeah.
They do.
You know, you look back at your time here, based on, you know, just on the win totals. I know there's a lot of optimism about where the franchise is headed, but based on the win totals the last 4 years or so, you look back to your time as kind of like the glory days almost, right, of the franchise. I mean, what was it like, just the heights when you guys had it rolling? Had a lot of guys that, as you look at the wall of Pro Bowlers right outside the door here, a lot of guys making waves, you know, on a national level in this in this NFL that we cover on a day-to-day basis. I mean, just when you look back, what are some of your favorite memories of your time here?
There's some great memories. I think when I first got drafted to Jacksonville and back in 2001, I think the team was just coming off as high and was going through those low years. And then right around 2003, 2004, we started picking it up the pace again. The team started improving. And those were the fun years. Those years that we were winning 10-plus games, we was making it into the playoffs. We was very competitive with the Colts back then. And those were just some great memories. Some of my favorite memories were the playoff wins versus Pittsburgh. Playoff win versus Pittsburgh, anytime we played Pittsburgh or Tennessee and we have victories against teams like that, they were always great memories. But that Pittsburgh game, that's probably sticks out as probably a special memory, especially for the offensive line, because we won it right there at the end of the game.
Well, and that was a phenomenal year, the offensive line getting the push, and doing whatever you had to do, let's just say, to open up things up for David Garrard on fourth down, which was phenomenal. How do you compare the rivalries that you had with Tennessee and Pittsburgh and others in the NFL to the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry in terms of intensity and fan passion and all that stuff?
I think all our NFL rivals were pretty competitive. I think you go back to college – I think there was such a hype about the Michigan-Ohio State game when the players came to play that game. They gave it their all. I still remember some of my hardest-hitting games probably were the Michigan-Ohio State games because guys really wanted to win that game. They have that bragging right to say, you know what, we are winning this rival and we are the best team.
You look at this team right now, and as you said, you're kind of maybe not in the exact same situation because the way they're building it, they really stripped it down to nothing here. At least that's the goal, to strip it down, build it all up at the same time. But you came from, as you said, an era when you first got here, you struggled for a few seasons. Then you got into that mode where you're winning 10 games. You're going to the playoffs in 2005, 2007. What advice do you give to young players that are going through a losing period that, you know, better times are around the corner?
Just as a young player in this league and in this industry, you're always working your craft. Every time you have a chance to go out to practice or you have a chance to play a game, whether you're winning a game or not, you need to be improving in how you're playing the game. As a tackle, you need to be improving in your blocking skills and how you understand the offense and different things like that, because it's getting you in position so the team can be better, use you to help the team win. And I think that's one of the things that young players need to understand, that even though the wins might not be there, but you have to be getting better because this is a competitive league and they're going to find somebody else who can compete at a high level.
Yeah, we looked at you always. I always thought of you, you're just a tackle. That's what Maurice Williams is, right? But in terms of value to a football team, we were just talking about Luke Polanco, who's played multiple positions, and we find out he's got a torn labrum in his hip, and we hope for a speedy recovery with him. But just having that versatility, the ability to play different positions. We're looking at Brandon Linder now having to take on a position he hasn't played yet in the pros at center, and they have high expectations for him. But you've got to be able to do multiple things to increase your value, it seems like, today.
We used to always have this saying in the locker room, which has a lot of truth to it. It says the more you can do, and the more you can do, it means more value that you have. And I knew I was a right tackle for a very long time, but I also had the athletic ability to kind of play multiple different positions. So I think I played a little center at one game, played guard, tight end. I just was unable to kind of to move around, but it made me more valuable, which added to my longevity in the league.
Tight end, huh?
A little tight end. I was more of a blocking tight
end. He looks like a tight end now. He looks like Julius Thomas. You're about Julius' size.
Like, when you're right running now. Tight end in practice, was there like, can I get the ball once? Was there some lobbying with the coaches?
I was lobbying with Andy Heck at the time, and my offensive line coach. It was no way they was going to give me the ball because I had hands like bricks.
Could you throw it? Could you do like a tight end reverse or something? Did you have a trick play that you were involved in at all?
I had a fake route where I just kind of went out 5 yards.
You're hoping they're covering you.
And that's
just
my
draw
trick.
One more defender. Yeah. And you mentioned the 2007 playoff game. Obviously, for fans of the Jags, it's the last real moment in the sun they've had. It's the last playoff victory they've had. You were a part of that team, obviously. Take us through the run from David Garrard, what you saw in that play, what you were doing on that play, what was going on in the huddle before that play got called, and the aftermath of that for this team as well.
I just remember being, I believe it was fourth down, and I know we had to have the first down in order to kind of seal that victory. And this, as an offensive line, when they called the play, we knew that we was going to, whatever it took, we was going to block our tail off 100%, 120%. And we went all in. We go back and watch the tape years later. It's like, man, we got away with some couple of
days. I didn't see it that way. But you know what? You figure, look, if they throw the flag and you get the first down, at least you get another crack at it, right?
That's right.
If they tackle him short and you blocked him clean, what good does that do you, right? All right. So do what you got to do. But I remember what a great atmosphere that was, man. And, you know, Jag fans certainly hungry. I'm sure you're hungry as an alumni. And I see you coming in for these alumni events. We had you on the pregame last year, and it's great to see all these guys that have made Jacksonville their home. But when you guys get together, what do you talk about in terms of your hope and your expectation for this current group of players?
We really want to see this team be successful. I think it's our team. We kind of feel like it still is our team. We want to see them winning. We know how much it means to the city to have a winning team. And we know as a player what it's like when you're winning, because when you're losing, it's not a fun environment. So we like, man, we got to get these young guys winning. So I'm excited. Really, for this offseason, you look at the draft picks and you look at the free agent acquisitions, that they're really making a move to improve this team.
They just need good health. That's all we need, right? I mean, and get a little break on that front, I think would go a long way. Maurice Williams, longtime Jag. I was looking up the numbers. Top 20 in games played all time. Do you feel it? I mean, you look like you're in great shape, but I don't know what you're feeling inside your body. You know, you play that many games, over 100 in the National Football League. You had to take somewhat of a toll.
Yeah, body definitely took a toll. I think it was one of the reasons why I have lost some of the weight is to help out with some of the injuries and stuff that I had over my career. And so I'm staying flexible, making sure that, because I actually feel worse when I don't work out. And so I actually make sure I have a good workout regimen, that I'm just doing things that I'm just kind of stay healthy.
Do you, I mean, in terms of everything that's gone on with the CTE and cognitive issues and it becoming more to the forefront now, football's always been a dangerous game. I'm sure you knew it was a dangerous game when you played, but we're learning more and more about the physical impacts it can have on your body. Do you worry about that kind of stuff, or do you feel that, you know what, for the most part, knock on wood, you escaped unscathed in that department?
I feel blessed in a lot of ways. I really came out of the game. I do have a few nicks, but I really don't have the cognitive things or the dementia or anything like that. I'm pretty sure I had a concussion over the course of my career as a lineman. I bang heads every play. But I'm not having any setbacks where I can say, hey, I'm hurting here or different things like that. But again, I definitely make sure I'm monitoring my staying healthy, eating right, and doing all the things that I know to do in the natural to make sure that I'm healthy.
You got your foundation going. We're going to talk about that coming up in just a few minutes, and the big events you've got going on with that, which is another cool thing that I think a number of former players have taken to, really trying to give back to this community that gave a lot to them. But let's talk a little bit more football here, specifically this offensive line. Luke Jokel, the first pick of the regime, and, you know, you want him to be an anchor. You want him to be the next Pacelli, right, which is unfair to compare him to Pacelli, but, you know, that's just the way it goes. He was the number two overall pick of this franchise. Right now he's in a battle for a starting spot, whether it's going to be at left tackle, battling with Kelvin Beachum. They're cross-training him a little bit at left guard. I don't know if you talked to Luke at all. What advice would you give him now? Going into his fourth year, you know, he gives the effort, but at times he just hasn't looked like a franchise left tackle. This is a big prove-it year for Luke Jokel.
It is, and just playing offensive line, just understanding what is required of an offensive lineman. It takes a lot of work, a lot of effort goes into that. And he does have that position because he was drafted so high. He is constantly going to be compared to Tony Boselli, who was a great player for this organization. I even had it as a second-round pick, and I'm like, man, so I understand what he's going through in that. But then understand, too, he's in a position right now, he really gets to show how hungry he is. Because one of the things that just the business part of the league, they do, they bring in other players to either push you to come to that next level in your play or to eventually phase you out. I think for him, I would say focus on getting better, work on those things that the coaches are asking you to work on, and all you can do is really control the effort that you give in practice and the effort that you give in the games. And if that is what is needed for you to maintain your starting position, then great. If not, there will be another organization out there for you.
How much can you improve on your own in the offseason as a player? You know, because you work out, but it's not the same. You can't simulate, you know, game-type experience. So in this time that Luke Jokel's had prior to OTAs, even now in OTAs where it's basically non-contact stuff, how much can you get better?
You can get better every offseason. It's a chance to get stronger, faster, to get smarter. You can do a lot more film study. You can study yourself, see where areas where that the coaches are saying that you're struggling that maybe you haven't seen for yourself. It's a great time to really hit those weights, to get your flexibility down. And really, I think you hit on it early, being successful in this league, a lot of it is staying healthy. And just being go through a season where you're healthy, you can really – now you can play at a higher level than probably you played if you got a nagging knee injury or a shoulder. It's kind of hard to really do what you want to do when you have those type of injuries.
Sure.
You know, your first 3 years in the league mode, the teams went in 5, 6, 7 games. And then you win 9 games in 2004, and the expectations for the team kind of go out the roof going into that 2005 season. Just being in an NFL locker room and being part of a team that had been struggling your first couple years in the league – how much did the raising expectations affect the guys in that locker room?
I think every season you go in with high expectations, and I think that year we went in, we won 9 games. You're like, you know what? We're now getting to that place where I think we know we want to get into this playoff. So there was a little bit more confidence, that this feeling like we were now getting in position as a team to get there.
You played at Michigan, which has been renowned, as far as I can recall, at least in the last few decades, of being a pro-style offense, right? One of the ones that really prepares you for as close to you can be prepared for what life like is like in the NFL. You see these spread offenses coming into college, and there's so many more of them, and it's requiring different things out of the offensive tackles and players across the board. how much did it benefit you going where you went and having that transition into the National Football League, and how tough is it on some of these guys coming out of spread offenses these days?
For me, it was in a pro-style offense at the University of Michigan.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, so we ran the ball a lot, and we actually have this your natural this drop back passes as well. So a lot of the stuff that I ran in Michigan was similar to what Coach Coughlin was doing once I got here. So it was kind of easier transition, and then playing in the Big Ten, I was exposed to some pretty high level talent, and it's still a different level once you get into the NFL, no doubt. But I say I had the foundation of what it was going to be like once I got here. I think it is probably a little bit more difficult for quarterbacks and different things like that to get used to now these more traditional style of offenses where you had the spread and you got so many different moving pieces to now I got to take the ball from under center and have a seven-step drop and different things like that. But for offensive linemen who coming out of school like in Michigan where they was used to running the ball, used to pass protecting, you was already exposed to some of the things that you needed to be successful.
We got the Mo Williams Family Foundation Game Changer Symposium coming up. We're going to talk about that coming up in a few minutes and what your hopes and expectations are for the 2016 version of the Jacksonville Jaguars. If folks want to get in, we got Mo Williams in studio, 641-1010. If you want to shoot a text with a question for Mo, 641-1010, the number, as well as the text line driven by Duval Ford with longtime Jaguar offensive tackle Maurice Williams. I'm Mike Dempsey, along with Fat Tony. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Fourth and two. Can the Jaguars survive? Garrard's going to run for the first down and a lot more. He is inside the 20. He's down to the 10-yard line.
This is what an athletic quarterback does for you. You get in this situation, you need a big play, he takes one look, it's not there, and he just runs it right up the middle, and he has the ability and the talent to run with it.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
How good was that week, Tony?
Oh, my gosh.
Before and after,
like,
right?
I can't even imagine how good it was for you guys in the locker room. I can tell you outside it, covering the team was unbelievably fun.
I can imagine, because I got to go, and it was crazy. And you didn't hear Mo Williams hold on that call at all, by the way. There was no holding.
No, I had hands inside.
There was no grasping of jersey. There was none of that. I remember, because you still had to end it out, right? I mean, Spice got the sack fumble on Roethlisberger, I think it was, right at the end of the game.
Right.
Either that or he recovered it. I forget exactly what the sequence was, but it wasn't done
right
when Scobie kicked the field goal, but it was pretty close. And just, being down on the sideline, it was a treat for me to see you guys just to get a chance to celebrate all that hard work. And so there you go. Let's hope almost a decade later we get a repeat of something similar this year, right?
Right. You know, those are the great memories we go back and just remember, like, what was it like to play in NFL and we have a big-time game? I think after we won a game, you can just sense the excitement around town and just the excitement just about where we could possibly can have a chance to make it to the Super Bowl and different things like that. It was just a really fun time for the organization and the city.
It was a crazy week, and then you went up there against the undefeated Patriots when no one outside of the 904 area code were giving you a prayer. You pretty much went toe-to-toe with that squad, right? I mean, no moral victories in the NFL, but if you're going to have one against a team that was arguably being considered the greatest regular season team of all time at that time, and maybe still the greatest regular season team, pretty impressive performance, not what you wanted. You wanted the W. You didn't settle, but still, what did it feel like to go toe-to-toe with the team that everyone said was such a cut above everybody else?
This that we belong, and I think going against the Patriots, I was going against one of my college quarterback, Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And so it was one of the games that I wanted to win, and so we played hard, and I think we played the Patriots a couple years before that in the playoffs, and they just demolished us. And so that was just I think we loved the fact that we were there and we was playing. Offensively, we knew we was doing some things well. We made a few mistakes here, but we didn't realize how Tom Brady actually that game didn't. None of his receivers dropped the ball.
I think it's crazy, right? And Henderson gets a sack like on the first play of the game. You're thinking, all right, we're in business, right? And then Brady pretty much kept that jersey clean for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, again, just talk about memories and the potential. And I think that's one of the things where Jaguar fans can kind of get excited, like once this team gets there again.
Right. If you stick with them through the down times, it's that much sweeter when you have success. I imagine the same with as a player. You know, you've grown with the same group of guys, and now you're finally starting to see your hard work pay off for you. It's got to be a great feeling.
It's a great feeling. I think the fans don't know this really how much value they really add to the players. I remember I think one year I think we was maybe one game or so shy of making it into the playoffs, and we was playing Houston Texan here at home, and I think it was right after the Thanksgiving or something like that. The game was, and we had just played Green Bay, cold game. We came back here, it was probably just as cold as it was in Green Bay, and we had half the fans in the stands. You notice that? I mean, you still play hard, do different things, but it's a difference when you got a full stadium and they're rooting you on the whole time.
Shad Khan has certainly put an investment into making the game day experience one of the best in the National Football League. In fact, I don't know what it came in last year, but the season prior was voted best game day experience in the NFL. It's pretty good for a team that wasn't winning a whole lot of games. So, you know, in addition to, you got to, number one thing is winning. Quality of play on the field, that's going to bring them out. But it's nice to have, to see all the amenities and to see all the construction going on here on every single offseason since you got here. They're adding something to the mix.
Yeah, it's a very fun environment to be in. I know that's when I got done, I was a former player coming back. It's like I got to kind of see what game day was actually like from a fan perspective, actually. Now to be the jumbotrons, you got the pools, you got the buzz zone, you got all these different things going on.
A little more character, right, in the mix. Now, I want to get to your foundation, but a caller called and asked Tyler to pass along greetings and wanted your thoughts on Harbaugh and the current state of the Michigan organization.
Now, I really like what Michigan is doing. I had a chance to go out there for the spring game. I think Coach Carr got the, what year was that, 1999 Orange Bowl champions. He actually got his rings because Michigan used to have a tradition where if you didn't win the Big Ten, you wasn't getting a national champion. You weren't getting a ring. But we was the first team to win like a BCS game for Michigan. So he decided, you know what, we needed a ring. So we had the old crew back. We had to be there with the new coaches and different things like that. There's an excitement that's going on in Ann Arbor. Harbaugh had some rappers there before.
Did he really? He may wear khakis, but he knows what the kids like, right?
So he's bringing a new excitement, I think, back to Michigan that hasn't been that kind of suffered over the last several years, and he knows football, and so I think from a former player and I think just an alumnus of Michigan, I think we're really excited where the program is going.
I bet you appreciated that Orange Bowl ring more having to wait for it. You know what I mean? You probably never thought you were going to get one, and then having it and realizing, you know what, we did accomplish something that was pretty cool. When you're a young kid, that might have just been just one more thing in the midst of being a big-time player, getting ready for the NFL. You might not have appreciated it as much at the time.
I definitely appreciated it more in this because I wasn't expecting it. I mean, when you play and you earn it, you're like, hey, I'm expecting my ring. And you talk about umpteen years later,
right,
they decides that he wants to give his old team a ring. It was good. It's always just fun just to get in those reunion environments where you're able to see your old coaches and old players, kind of see how fat everybody's gotten now.
Not you, man. Not you. You got that over them, that's for sure. Maurice Williams here with us. The Mo Williams Family Foundation Game Changers Symposium. Just give some basics about the foundation, first off. Why did you want to start it, and what is the purpose of your organization?
The mission of the Maurice Williams Family Foundation is to empower Northeast Florida families to live purposeful, healthy, and giving lives. And we just really want to see people thrive. And I recognize from where I come from to where I am today is because I had a lot of good people pouring into me, and I had to learn some important things along the way as far as character, and the good decision-making, the value of friendships and faith. And so, you know what, so much was invested in me. Why does this is a good opportunity for now to pour back into other people?
You've got such a great opportunity. I think any kid that sees you and says, wow, this guy made it. He knows what he's talking about. He lived the life as a professional athlete that many kids aspire to, and to hear the message that you've got to do the right things, take care of your business, and that these other aspects of your life are equal or more important than anything you're going to do as a chosen profession. I would think coming from a professional football player, it's got to have a lot of impact on some of these kids.
And it's definitely as professional athletes, even collegiate athletes, and even high school athletes, you have a platform. And I still have a platform as a former player, and this is one of the things I want to do in my foundation is really just to give back. And one of the things that probably bothers me more than anything when I see young athletes get in trouble, make some decisions that kind of really throw away a lot of potential that they could have had. It could have been scholarships. It could have been a contract. A lot of different things are continuing to happen. And I was one of the young athletes, and when I was in college, I was just young and dumb, made some dumb decisions. I'm getting a hookup at a store and almost messed up my potential to graduate from Michigan and to be drafted in the NFL potentially one day. But I understood once I got in trouble that there's a right way to do things. Character became important for me after that point. And so right decision making. So I think over the course of my career, I had to make sure that that I was had long-term thinking skills. I had to understand, like, okay, if I make this decision today, this can hamper what I'm trying to do tomorrow. So just different things like that. With the symposium, what we're looking to do is really teach young student athletes what is their platform. Because usually in high school, they're the most popular kids in the school. Everybody know, even if they're not the most popular kids, everybody know who the star football player is, sure, the star basketball player is. How can they use that platform for good? How can they make a difference in their community? How can they give back? And that's kind of my heart behind this whole symposium. We're going to have we'll have different topics such as social media, how to use social media. We'll talk about what it is to have a platform. We'll talk about the importance of character and leadership. And then we'll also talk about the value of faith as well, and just how all these components come together to having a career that is thriving, that I like to say with my foundation.
This event is called the Game Changer Symposium. By the way, if you want to learn more about this or anything that Mo Williams has going on, go to Mo Williams FamilyFoundation.org, Mo, M-O-E. So make sure you get that E in there, Mo Williams FamilyFoundation.org. As you mentioned, it's free. It's for high school and college student athletes, and parents or coaches are welcome to attend as well. The topics you're going to cover, you've mentioned many of them, your playbook topics: faith, character, leadership, friendships, financial literacy, and domestic violence. Domestic violence is an issue across society, right? It's not just professional athletes, but sometimes those high-profile cases that involve athletes get a lot of publicity, which can be good, I would think, for the cause. It's never good when it happens, but it's good if it can shine a light and, you know, help people make better decisions. Hey, that's not where I want to go. Look at the repercussions. It's just wrong. It's flat out wrong. But B, look at how it can, you know, impact my life in a negative way. Why did this specific aspect of all the things that are going on become one of the key tenets for you?
I think you're seeing it as a rising issue in sports right now. This you go back to Ray Rice, look at Johnny Manziel, and this guys is making decisions that is poor when it comes to women, their wives or significant others. Even go back to some of the cases back from Florida State. We're seeing that this is an issue. So I think one is reason we wanted to bring it up. Okay, let's talk about this. How do you avoid this, and how to give them some positive things that they can do if they find themselves in a frustrating situation with a girlfriend, if they find themselves in a situation where they feel like they need to lash out and do different things like that. Ken Jefferson, who many know in the city, is going to come and do a crime and consequences piece, and he's going to be able to touch on some of these things as well. So we brought in some experts, brought in some old friends. Rasheem Mathis will be there. I got Richard Collier will be involved. I have the chaplain from the University of Florida, Kevin Sizer, will be coming down. And Tyson will be coming here from the Jaguars.
Sure, Tyson. Oh, well, sure.
And so we have some guys who knows what it is to be successful. And we also got some different industries and experts that kind of help address some of these topics as well.
It sounds like you have chosen your speakers wisely based on some of those guys that we know anyway. It's coming up on June 25th, but it's never too early to sign up, because while the event is free, registration is required, and eventually you're going to have to cap it. I know you're providing lunch for the kids this year as well, which is a great thing. The Game Changer Symposium, you know the game, you play the game, now change the game is the motto, the Mo Williams Family Foundation. Again, go to mowilliamsfamilyfoundation.org, and the event will be taking place at Impact Church, which is on Lone Star Road here in Jacksonville. You know, there are probably some kids out there or parents of kids out there right now that – for whatever reason, won't be able to attend this. What kind of message would you like to leave them in the short term? And by the way, we love having you in. You're always welcome to come back anytime, whether it's to talk about your foundation or just talk football with us. But if there's a message you'd like to leave kids and their parents right now at this age, what's the one point you'd like to make?
I think the one point that I would like to make is just be able to have some vision. Where do you want to be? And if you want to be a professional athlete, if you want to be a collegiate athlete, if you just see yourself being successful in business or just having a good family, then you need to come up with a vision. You need to write down how I'm going to get there, and what are the things that will take away from me being able to get there, whether that be decision-making, whether that be friends, whether that just be just being in a bad environment. You have to start putting yourself around people that can really encourage that gifting that's on the inside of you. So whether that's just being just a great talk person on the radio or whatever, surround yourself with those type of people. And kind of get away from some of the negative things that we talk about. I spoke to a middle school transition program, kids over at A. Philip Randolph. And I just talked to them about their potential. Young people have a lot of potential, but really wrong decision-making, getting around the wrong crowds will really destroy the potential that they have, because nobody will ever want anything to do with them because of their name. And you only get one name, so what is your legacy going to be? And that's really what I'm hitting at with the heart of these young people. What will your legacy be? Because nobody knows it right now. You're just potential. But in order for that potential to reach its maximum, you got to be surrounded by the right people. You got to be surrounded by the right influence. And so that's where we're just encouraging positive lives here.
Mo Williams is working on a very good reputation in my book. I'll tell you what. Again, the Game Changer Symposium is for high school and college student athletes. Parents and coaches are also welcome to attend this. And again, faith, character, leadership, friendships, financial literacy, domestic violence, and how the decisions you make today impact you down the road and have a little foresight in your life is a tough message for kids to comprehend. You know, we always tell them, hey, learn from my mistakes, and they don't, you know, sometimes you got to go through it yourself, but to hear it from a guy who's been through it in a position where they certainly look up to, Mo, it's good work that you and a number of Jaguars are doing. It's great to see you. Again, you look fantastic. I'm so jealous. I guess, Tony, if I worked out every day, I might look and feel better. Like,
you got to write down those goals. You got to figure out what you want.
You know what? This may be my inspirational moment right here. Mo, seriously, fantastic to see you. Open door policy anytime you want. Anything we can do for you here on Jaguars Today, love to have you back.
All right, thanks for having me on, Mike. Thanks, Tony.
All right, there he goes. Mo Williams, longtime Jacksonville Jaguar, one of the guys who played among the 20 most games in franchise history, over 100 contests he suited up for your Jacksonville Jaguars, and never got any Steeler jersey in his hands on that fourth down run. Trust me on it. It's as clean a block as you'll ever see in the National Football League. Mo Williams, thanks so much. Coming up, this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry here. We'll start with 1967 on this date, May 24th. The AFL granted a franchise to which city, Fat Tony?
1967.
Who joined the AFL in 67?
I have no idea. Denver.
That'd be the Cincinnati Bengals, sir. You're incorrect. Famous birthdays for this date. 1951. Have you heard of the Killer Bees defense, the Miami Dolphins in the early 80s?
Mm-hmm.
Can you name any of the Killer Bees?
No.
Lyle Blackwood. How about that? There's one for you. Happy birthday, Lyle Blackwood. He's 65 years old today. In the strike-shortened 1982 NFL season, the Dolphins were led by that Killer Bees defense. Featured Bob Baumhauer, Bill Barnett, Lyle Blackwood, Glenn Blackwood, Kim Bocamper, Charles Bowser, Doug Betters, and Bob Brudzinski. That's a pretty big group there, and held five of their nine opponents in the strike-shortened year to 14 or fewer points as they made it to the Super Bowl, ultimately losing to the Washington Redskins. Also born on this date in 1955, a local guy, Derek Gaffney, played 8 years as a wide receiver for the New York Jets, father of Jabbar Gaffney, uncle of Lito Shepherd, and a Raines High graduate. He turned 61 years old today. Happy birthday to Derek Gaffney. 1980, former Jaguar pass rusher Jason Babin was born on this date. Two-time Pro Bowler prior to arriving in Jacksonville, turns 36 years old, and former first-round pick just last year by the Philadelphia Eagles. We like to call him the guy that Miles Jack locked down. That'd be Nelson Aguilar. Happy 23rd to the Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver. This state in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you need a family dentist or if you need cosmetic work done, call 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
While the discussions between free agent quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick and the team he led to 10 wins in 2015, that being the New York Jets, have continued throughout the offseason, yesterday was the first time that Fitz himself has weighed in. He was playing in a charity golf tournament yesterday and told the media there that he is going to play football in 2016 and hopes that it will be back with the Jets. 2015 was by far the best season of Fitzpatrick's career. It was the first time that he had won more than six games in a single season, going 10-6. He threw for a career-high 3,905 yards, along with 31 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. Negotiations between the two sides have been at a reported standstill for the last 3 months as Fitz is demanding a lot more money than the Jets at this point, at least, have been willing to come off the hip for. The back and forth between the NFL and the United States government is heating up after a report published by the House Energy and Commerce Committee stated that the NFL tried to influence where the research on traumatic brain injuries was going to take place, and further stated that when the NFL didn't get its way, they backed out of the study and left the taxpayers to fit the $16 million bill instead. The NFL released a statement saying that the league raised questions about the study and some potential conflicts of interest, but insist that they did so through the appropriate channels. And the beat goes on that story. Also today, Dwight Freeney, who we talked about a little bit last week, 38-year-old pass rusher, expected to work out with the Cincinnati Bengals at some point this week.
All right, there you have it around the National Football League. Let's hear from around the Jacksonville Jaguars. Coming up, by the way, in about 30 minutes, Paul Posluszny scheduled to join us as soon as Jaguar OTA practice gets wrapped up for the day. In the meantime, yesterday, Gus Bradley and Dante Fowler Jr. met with the media after the first OTA session of 2016. And one of the things that Gus addressed was the impact of Dante Fowler being back on the practice field. What has he seen from him, not only yesterday, but throughout the all season so far?
I thought Dante looked really good. I mean, he has looked good through phase one, phase two, phase three. Still has some work to do, and he has a little bit of rustiness. We're holding him back a little bit. He's not getting the same reps as everybody else. But, you know, we just want to see how he comes along, how he handles it. But attitude and work ethic, man, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just, I mean, it's all individual drill work. So when you're seeing him go around the hoops or the bags or things like that, you see his, you know, his explosiveness and his skill set. So, yeah, he's really done a good job. Believe me, that was tough on him, really tough. I know some, I've heard and visited with some coaches that say, you know, in the NBA, they draft guys that have had gone through some sort of adversity, some sort of injury to show that they can come back. I don't know if that's ideal or not, but I can say with Dante, I think the whole thing has helped him. Helped him to a certain level of maturity.
Yeah, let's hope so. And obviously, anyone we've talked to in the building throughout this offseason has been very glowing in the way that they've spoken about Dante Fowler Jr. and his recovery and everything that's going on with that guy. I mean, it's been pretty incredible for a guy who missed his entire rookie season. And it was everyone's first opportunity to see him on the field yesterday. It seems like he did impress everyone who got the chance to see it.
And I think, Tony, there's a natural inclination to try to not overhype what you're seeing from Dante Fowler, right? You don't want to get crazy with it, but I do get the sense that they think, oh boy, please just get us to September, because if he continues along this pace, you know, again, we're a full year beyond him tearing that ACL. So that thing should be fully recovered. As Dante said yesterday, he can cut it loose. They're going to be smart with him, and they should be. Here's what he had to say, talking about yesterday during practice, had what would have been a potential sack. Had it been an actual game, they don't let you light up the quarterback, and that's probably a good thing in these OTAs. And just talked about that and making it through one full practice.
Just to know that it was a sack, it felt good, you know, just to get back out here and move around and just to showcase some stuff, you know, especially on the first day. And, you know, we're in shorts and helmets. We'll really see what, you know, how it is with pads on and stuff like that. But today I really just wanted to come out here, make it through a practice, you know what I mean? And, you know, just get the feel of it again and just be around the guys and be happy again.
One for one in 2016 for Dante Fowler, getting through practices healthy. Hopefully we stop talking about stacking practices and start talking about stacking sacks in games for Dante Fowler in the very near future. Obviously, the first round pick this year, also dealing with an injury, Jalen Ramsey. We've been talking about that for the last couple days here on the show. Dante talked a little bit about the advice that he's given Ramsey after that injury.
Yeah, I just told him, you know, just stay, you know, in good thoughts and things like that. You know, stay positive. And, you know, you'll be fine, you know. I was like, it's not worse than, you know, what I had. You know, it's not really a big of a deal, so you'll be fine.
As Dave Caldwell said yesterday, we expect Jalen to play a lot of football for us in 2016. I'd like that to mean, I don't know, about 19 games worth. But I'll take 16 right now, just thinking about the regular season. Dante Fowler just talked about just the emotion of being back out on the football field.
Felt good, you know, being able to make it through a practice, you know, and not have everybody all worried and scared and stuff like that. But it just felt good, you know, just to finally be back, especially with my recovery. And it's, you know, just really antsy to go out there and just, you know, play again and just be out there and have fun and just be around my teammates and coaches.
Yeah, and he's had months now where he's been working. He was on the field off to the side a little bit last year when we were out there at times. Even in training camp, he was out there working with just some guys on the side. He's been doing this stuff for months and months and months now. He had to watch an entire season, had the opportunity to be in the film room with the team last year during the regular season. He's been working throughout this offseason again and finally able to get out there on the field. And for Dante, at least he's saying the right things about this, says that it doesn't even enter his mind, that knee right now, when he gets out on the football field.
Well, I mean, the training staff, you know, they did a really good job of, you know, getting me right and getting me back until, you know, the right shape that I need to be in, you know, being able for my knee to be able to, you know, move and bend in those, you know, those type of ways. So it felt good, you know. I really don't, you know, think about it, try to worry about it, you know. I'm trying to get rid of that mental area. And once you get rid of that, you'll be ready to go.
All right, let's hope that's the case. If he's already by some of the mental hurdles, I'm sure there'll be more points in time when they go full contact, when you've got to, you know, test it for the first time. But
I can't wait to see Dante actually hit somebody. It's been over 500 days since he played in his last football game.
I hear you. I'm sure he can't wait until he can hit somebody as well. I don't necessarily need to see him doing that in OTAs and mini camps. Maybe save some of that for training camp or the preseason games. But I hear what you're saying, Tyler. Let's cut this guy loose and make a big boost to the Jags pass rush immediately. All right, there you go. A little bit from Dante Fowler Jr. More from Gus Bradley coming up, and a visit with Paul Posluszny. He's going to join us live, scheduled to join us live at least 25 minutes from now. So stick around for that question of the day for you today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of automobile dealerships. You can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook with the response, or even the text line, driven by Duval Ford for that matter, is which backup player on the Jaguars is the most indispensable? Who would be the biggest loss if they were to go out for this football team? You can look at and define backup any way you want. I define Ivory and Yeldon as kind of co-starters, but you don't have to do that if you want to go with one of the running backs. You're certainly welcome to do whatever you like on that score. And we'll get to some of those responses hopefully a little later on before we close out the show. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I gotta admit, despite the fact that I wasn't sure people were always running tape on all those flubs in the production studios, I kind of enjoy those promos, you know? Some of my best work. That's me. That's me. Absolutely. Gus Bradley, we'll get to him here momentarily. Paul Posluszny about 20 minutes away, right on the practice field right now. He'll be coming off all sweaty and disgusting, and that's the way we like him around here. Football, baby. It's back. It's back. Thanks to Mo Williams, longtime Jag, for stopping in the first hour and spending some time with us. MoWilliamsFamilyFoundation.org. Check out everything he's got going on. M-O-E for Mo. MoWilliamsFamilyFoundation.org. Let's get more of Gus Bradley, the head coach of your Jacksonville Jaguars, here on Jaguars Today. And we'll start with what he opened up with after the first OTA practice.
I would say a good start. Not a great start. I thought there were some things that, some issues we need to get taken care of. But I kind of like that as far as the first day. Because the team recognized it. What I saw, what I did like, was they're starting to hold each other accountable from day one. We're not going in and having a team meeting about, hey, you got to hold each other accountable to the standard. Those discussions are over. Those guys know the standard, and so I like that part of it. And I thought overall, you know, some really good signs. I think the young players are what's holding us back a little bit, but that happens at this stage.
Let's be honest, Tony. If it were a perfect practice, they'd be looking for things that they didn't do right anyway, right? Yeah, as a coach, as a coach, on day one of OTAs, you don't want it to be perfect. You want plenty of things you can critique.
You guys got it, I think.
And work. Right, hey, we're good. You guys got it. Exactly. It's a little afternoon
no
delight going on.
No coach is
going
to be saying that kind of thing. Gus Bradley speaking after day one of the OTAs yesterday. Of course, some of the big news involving the Jaguars is injuries, especially the one to Jalen Ramsey. And he talked about trying to go back and look at when he got injured, and they just couldn't find it on tape.
I could be really honest with you and say it's hard to see. You know, both him and I have had conversations about it, and you really can't see anything on tape. But that's all I'm going to say about it, just to protect him a little bit. But, yeah, I can't tell on tape. You cannot tell anything on tape, and he made it through the workout.
No one's going to care if Jalen Ramsey comes back and gets a solid second opinion and is back sooner rather than later and is ready to go for training camp, which I think is still the great hope here in Jacksonville. One guy who'll be ready right now, as we know, for training camp, but not to start the regular season, as Aaron Colvin suspended for the first four games of the regular season, which is why Ramsey's injury has a little bit more importance there in the secondary. Gus talked about how he's handling that situation and how he's looked so far.
It's hard. Aaron Colvin right now looks really, really good. Really good. In both the phases, coming out here today, his work ethic, his attitude, so he's doing really well. If you were to say, Gus, who's standing out in the first one, phase one and phase two, Aaron Colvin. So, but his attitude, I've had conversations about him. I'm not concerned about his spirit. I think what he's gone through and some of the injuries he's had and come back from that, he's disappointed this happened, but it's not affecting his work ethic or attitude.
Yeah, he'll be out for the first four games of the season, but it is good to hear that he is excelling here during the offseason, because they certainly are going to need him once he does get back there for Game 5, and we'll see what kind of catch-up he does have to play by the time we get to that point. But that's a long way down the road. Something in the much more short term for this Jaguars team is who the heck is the left tackle. And it could be Luke Jokel. It could be Kelvin Beachum. Gus Bradley commented yesterday after practice about how they're using Luke Jokel, at least early on in the OTAs.
We will. We'll try to move. He'll play some tackle and some guard.
How did he look?
We'll see. Yeah. You know, here's another one. I think when you look at Luke compared to the last play of the last season to now, I think he's physically had some changes. You know, he looks stronger, looks like, you know, just his attitude and his work ethic. He's really focused. Seems like a different type of a player. Not that he wasn't before, but, you know, he's on a little bit of a mission, it feels like.
And we talked about that yesterday with John Osier, Tony, that you can be focused and you can have, you know, great tenacity and all these things. Human nature, when your back's to the wall, you're going to find a little extra reserve. And in terms of his playing career in Jacksonville, Luke Jokel's back is a little bit to the wall right now, and he's acknowledged that. He acknowledged that yesterday, and he said he wants to stay in Jacksonville, wants to prove he belongs here in Jacksonville. So, look, I don't know how much you can evaluate in any of these OTAs in terms of offensive line play, right, when they're not allowed to really go full contact. So, look, for Jaguar fans' sake, you should root for Luke Jokel, because – he'll either make it a more competitive position at left tackle, where if Kelvin Beachum beats him out, it's because he's earned it, or maybe he becomes a valuable piece somewhere else on that offensive line and you get something out of your investment in him. Gus was asked, moving over to the defense now, what about the depth? We've got Dante Fowler and the linebacker positions. So the question is, what do you have behind those spots? Here's what he had to say.
I think there's two things I really like. I think we've got more competition there. And then, you know, with the Otto position, we moved Ryan Davis from Leo to Otto. And we're really creating that like a Lotto position, a guy that can play Otto and Leo. And so that's where you're seeing Scooter. You're going to see Scooter get more reps and legit reps. You know, he's going down to actually work with the D-line this year. So is Ryan Davis. They're working with Scotty Hazleton. He's taking the Ottos by himself, and then he can run back and forth. So that's a different feel for us than we were last year.
Yeah, the Lotto position, it's been talked about here for the last couple months, and it seems like it's being put into play here early on in OTA, specifically for a guy like Ryan Davis, who's been a Leo since he got here to Jacksonville. At least that's where he's been on a depth chart. Transitioning a little bit, Gus Bradley talked about that transition for him.
I think, you know, initially I thought it would be a transition for him, but he's very athletic. You know, we were looking both at Ryan Davis and Tyrone, you know, to see which one we felt like can make the transition easier. And just, you know, seeing his athleticism, Ryan Davis, we felt like would be a better move for him to be that Lotto spot.
Trying to give him options right now. Another guy, Tony, a little bit under the radar when they signed him, got him on a one-year deal. Prince Amukamara, maybe even more critical right now. We don't know, you know, what the lingering effects will be, if any, from the Jalen Ramsey injury. We do know Aaron Colvin is suspended for the first month of the season, as we mentioned. So Prince Amukamara figures to be playing a lot of football for the Jags, particularly early on. Gus talked about that addition to the football team.
Good. We love competition within our team. So to have guys like that that have played at a high level, it'd be interesting to see. I was hoping Prince would be back. It was, we're being more cautious with it so it doesn't linger for the rest of OTA. So hopefully we can get him back. But, you know, he's done a good job, too, in phase one, phase two. It's you know, you're just seeing him backpedal, though. And I think the truth will be when we come out here and actually line up against guys. And even though we can't press, you know, you can see some of the skill set.
Yeah, Prince is a former first-round pick, played like it when he was healthy at times with the New York Giants. So a one-year kind of prove-it deal for him. If it's not going to be with Jacksonville, it'll be with somebody, kind of like they did with Stefan Wisniewski last year during the free agency period. And with the injury potentially to Jalen Ramsey, which we still don't know how long that's going to be, plus Aaron Colvin being out the first month of the season, Prince is going to be a guy that's going to be relied upon a lot. In the early part of the year, especially.
You know, Tony, despite the fact that they have Devon House, who was their best corner last year, you add Ramsey, and you have high hopes for Colvin, and you hear some glowing reports about him. Those are your primary other guys right now at cornerback. Amukamara seems like a guy that, unless he prices himself out of the market with some ridiculous play this year, because the Jags already have some starting caliber guys, they feel, I could see them giving him another contract and having him back. You always hear you can't have enough good quality cornerbacks, and certainly three, heck, you play three a ton. That doesn't give you much depth, and when you have a circumstance pop up like you do with COVID or an injury, you got to have that depth. Amukamara could be a key piece for this football team this year with a chance to stick around beyond that.
No doubt about it, and I'm sure Gus Bradley, you know, he's talking after the first OTA practice yesterday, and he gets to answer questions about the Jalen Ramsey injury and where it happened and what he thinks about it. And then he gets to announce that, you know, Luke Bowenko is going to be out with an injury to his hip, and that we lost our seventh round pick for the entire year to an Achilles injury. He's dealing with all this injury discussion. And of course, if you're going to talk injuries with the Jaguars, eventually the name of Marquise Lee is going to come out of somebody's mouth. So Gus Bradley asked to comment on Marquise Lee after practice yesterday.
We haven't had him in a lot of practices until the end of last year. So just to see him practice, and he can build up and stack up good practice after good practice, because he does need some technique work. His issue is not his skill set. His speed is something that we don't have, and his athleticism. So I think just stacking up really good practices.
As Tyler said a moment ago, oh no. Hey, that's not me. Listen.
Uh-oh.
Is it?
Right.
It's
nice.
Good. It went away. Yeah. I don't think that's the jackhammer, Tony.
That was a drill.
Jackhammer. That was just a drill?
Yeah, that was a drill.
Ah, tell those guys from the morning show they've had enough time.
I heard a little bit of hammering earlier, but now we got the drill.
We're under construction. Okay. Do they know Paul Posluszny will be in here in about 10 minutes? They should.
All we need is 15 minutes, guys.
That's right. Let's wrap up with this Gus on Bjorn Werner and whether or not they liked him before he signed on to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I did like him. I know we liked him too. You know, I think when he first came out, you'd have thought he was a traditional left end, you know, who lines up over a tight end and plays the C-gap and can rush from the outside. We're going to play him at Leo. I think his size, because he played outside linebacker, he's dropped some weight. So he's shown up and done some good things as far as individual drills. We'll see how he goes against tackles. But, you know, some of those traits that we liked as a left end, you know, we'll see if they show up.
They're stacked up at Leo now, Tony. Stacked up, I tell you. He wouldn't be the first guy who got his career going with his second team who used him in a better way, a way he's more suited to be used. And everyone, I think, questioned, why are you going to take Bjorn Werner and play him at a position that he never really played before and felt he was miscast? Look, maybe he's not going to be good enough to get it done at Leo either, but I think he's got a better shot. So we'll keep an eye on that as the summer goes along as well. We'll take a time out here a little bit early. Paul Posluszny, Jaguar middle linebacker, scheduled to join us in less than 10 minutes, coming right off the practice field. It's Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go. Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank, where the preparations continue for the 2016 season. Not only on the field, Tony, but behind the scenes.
You could say the men are at work.
Men are at work right now. Very nice. It's business as usual down here at Everbank. Can you hear it now, Tyler?
I hear nothing, but during the break, it was getting a little bad there.
Yeah, there's a periodic little drilling going on above our head. Maybe we can slide in some more Men at Work references along the way as well. That would be fun. Men at Work was my jam back in junior high, Tony, to date myself. I tell my son everything happened to me in junior high. I say, Colin, you know, back in junior high, and he knows I'm probably lying at that point in time. It's not a lie. It's just a tall tale. Dad likes to tell tall tales
right.
From time to time.
But have you... Have you seen on Twitter here in the last couple hours, people are going nuts about the Buffalo Bills and them not wanting any reports to get out about what they're doing in the offseason? And I just saw that Jason Cole basically took a picture of the policy that the Bills sent out that the media is going crazy about, right? And said, this is what they're doing so fans will find out nothing about what's going on with their team. This is how it reads. No reports, which include radio reports, tweets, podcasts, and blogs pertaining to strategic and tactical information, are prohibited. This includes referencing plays run or game strategy, including trick plays or unusual formations, reporting on personnel groupings, sub-packages, players who are in practicing with individual units, first team, second team, goal line, offense, nickel defense, etc., special plays, who is rushing the passer, drop passes, interceptions, quarterback completion percentage, etc., and only Bills personnel are permitted on the grass. I don't know what their practice facility looks like, so
yeah, I don't
know what that means or not. That is the Jaguars that's the protocol for the media that are out there right now for the Jacksonville Jaguars
Pretty much.
You can't talk about who's running first, second team, what they're doing in sub packages unless Bradley talks about
it. Right, because they are talking about Luke Jokel, you know, train, and that's kind of the loophole, right? If you ask Gus about it after practice and Gus talks about it, I guess you can talk about it to some degree. But
they are going nuts about the Bills' practice policy right now.
I guess you got to have go nuts about something. See, that kind of thing doesn't matter to you and I as much as it does to others who have to report and write stories on a daily basis based on what they see. It becomes a little more selective. I guess you can write profiles on players. I'd rather just talk to Paul Posluszny and have him tell us, you know, how you doing? What's going on? Talking about Miles Jack, what do you think? All this kind of stuff.
I think
stuff.
They're finally done practicing. Blake is talking to the media right now.
Right. So hopefully Paul Posluszny will be along in a few minutes, which gives us a couple of minutes, Tony, to take a look at some of the fan feedback spotlight today, where we asked folks who is the most indispensable backup player on this football team. However you want to look at it, backup, reserve, rotational player, a non-starter is what we're looking for. Who's the most indispensable one? What do we get on Twitter today?
A couple here from Duval Doom. That's a good one. Think I'll go with Tyson Alualu. Versatility all over the line from Frank.
Hold on. What is that? Doom saying that's a good one is, I interpret that as, hey, when am I coming back for number six? Right?
And maybe we'll have the jacket ready for him by then.
You know what? Let's hold that thought. Paul Posluszny is going to join us here in just a second, straight off the practice field, which I know those players, that's what they look forward to the most. It's like, hey, guys, I'm all good and sweaty. Can I go in and talk to the guys on Jaguars today for a few minutes before I hit the showers, if that's possible? Can you guys work that in with me? Paul Posluszny, Jaguar middle linebacker, kind enough to join us for a few minutes. How you doing, man? How's your off season been?
Good. It's going really well so far.
Yeah, good to be back on the field. I mean, I would think a guy like you, you seem to eat, sleep, and breathe it, you know, football. So I would think being out there with your teammates is always a good thing.
Absolutely, especially this time of the year when, you know, up until this point, it's just been lifting, running, training. Now to actually get on the field and play football and be in that type of environment, it's an exciting time of year.
A lot of new faces for you guys, too, on the defensive side of the ball. For you, you know, watching the process through free agency and the draft, the fans are obviously really excited about the potential for change on that side of the ball. As the guy who's in the middle of this defense, are you as excited?
Absolutely, especially when you look at the guys that we brought in. They are all impact players, guys that will immediately have a great positive impact on our defense, and you'll see them. You'll see them show up right away. So to be able to play with those guys and have the, you know, that type of environment, that type of group, man, we're really excited to get this thing going.
As a middle linebacker, is it especially gratifying when they get a big guy in the middle of that defensive line who's going to occupy some of those guys and you can just go run and hit ball carriers?
That always makes life easier for a middle linebacker when you got the type of guys that we have up front. You know, that's our D-line is going to be a special group. So it's going to make life easier for everybody.
Man, we were going through the numbers yesterday. There are going to be tough cuts on this football team, which is a great sign that the overall talent on this roster is getting better. Some good football players will not make this team. It's just becoming a numbers game there.
Yeah, you know how that is. I mean, that's part of the deal at times. But like you said, that's showing that talent-wise, we're growing. We're growing and getting better, and we have a lot of guys that can compete at a high level.
You know, football is football, Paul, and you've been a productive player since you got here to Jacksonville, but you've, you know, been here through this whole rebuild and trying now going into year four with these guys and this group and bringing in what they have in free agency and the draft. Is there a different feeling compared to years past, maybe the last two or three years going into this one with the expectations seeming like they are as high as they've been?
I think so. I think as a team, we can kind of feel the situation that, hey, we say, you know what, we have elite players on this team now. Coaching staff is great. They've done their job the entire time. It's just it goes on us as players, as a group, to say, all right, it's time to step it up, bring things to another level, because we need to have success on the field now.
By the way, we got the Pardon Our Dust sign up. If you hear the drill,
a little construction going
the
on.
The stadium, yeah. Like
this
the roster,
this is the level of adversity we deal with, Paul.
That's right. This is our adversity here. Paul Posluszny, Jaguar middle linebacker here. Obviously, one of the coups of the draft seems to be when the Jags were able to land Miles Jack in round two. We understand why he fell, but we understand what he's capable of. At least his college tape shows you. As a middle linebacker, you've got a young guy that you look to maybe be the future of that position group. What is your responsibility in not only, you know, preparing yourself, but helping this guy along to be the most effective teammate he can be in 2016?
I think personally that'll be one of my largest responsibilities for the 2016 season, is to help bring him along as fast as we can, because like you said, he is the, you know, between him and Telvin Smith, that's the future of the linebackers, the future of the defense for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So to bring him on as fast as we can so that he can have an impact right away, that I feel like that'll be part of my responsibility this year.
What is your short and long-term future here? I mean, can you look, just because Miles Jack's coming here, you're going to play, obviously. You're the middle linebacker on this football team. How many more years do you want to go? Can you see yourself signing another contract? Can you see yourself in Jacksonville? Is the writing on the wall that, you know, hey, I'm going to go as long as I can, and some of these younger guys are going to take my spot? Where do you see yourself fitting in with this organization going forward?
I mean, I want to play in the NFL as long as I can. As long as it's physically that I'm able to play at a high level, I want to play. And I want to play for Jacksonville. You know, I love playing for Coach Bradley and this staff, this organization. I really think it's an organization on the rise, and we can all feel that now. You know, whether I'm going to get that opportunity, I don't know. All I know is I need to stay healthy, play at a high level, and if I do that, I'll have an opportunity to stay.
You know, we talked with former Jaguar offensive tackle Maurice Williams this morning, and one of the most gratifying things for him was to go through some lean years and then finally to have that success. So it'd be nice, right, to go through and see the build and be a part of that, and now to finally say, all right, we're beyond building. Let's go play football.
Absolutely. I think that would be one of the greatest accomplishments, to be in an environment where we've struggled, we've seen this thing start from the ground up, and then to finally have that success, that'd be so gratifying to be a part of that.
Todd Walsh, new defensive coordinator for you guys, obviously still a familiar face, but have you been able to sense a change, maybe in attitude, maybe in the way that practice works for you guys here early on?
The level of intensity has definitely changed. It changed for the better. You know, I think we'll be a much more disciplined defense this year. It's just he emphasizes different things that will have a very, very positive impact on our defense. We're going to be highly detailed, highly disciplined, and we're going to line up and do things right.
And that seems like it's trickled down with the players as well. Gus Bradley saying yesterday, you know, we don't need to hold a meeting after the first practice to say, hey, guys, let's be accountable. The accountability level is there. The expectation level amongst you guys seems to be higher this year.
No doubt about it. Everybody wants to play at our highest level, and we want to win. We very much understand the situation. Say, hey, we're fortunate to be here. Let's do everything that we absolutely can, hold each other accountable so that we can have the success on the field that everybody wants.
You guys had success last year when you played the Jets. You did a good job containing Chris Ivory in the run game that day, but he brings it every single time. As a middle linebacker, do you relish playing against those guys? And how nice is it now to have one of those on your side that you don't have to bang heads with him all the time?
Yeah, it's great to have Chris with us. You know, playing against him last year and watching him on tape, you said, wow, this is a strong, powerful runner that really makes big plays. So to get him on our side, we felt like that was a great addition for us.
Telvin Smith, a top 80 voted player in the league by the players. I don't know how much you guys pay attention to those lists when they're coming out here during the off season, but a pretty cool honor for him. Is he running his mouth? I know he's a trash talker anyway. Is he talking a little bit about that?
No, he's, you know, like you said, he's an exciting guy to be around, but when it comes to that, he's very, very humble, and he knows that the sky is the limit for him, and he's going to continue to work as hard as he can. He's one of the hardest workers on the team, and he's a great leader. So to have him, he's starting to reach his potential, because we know he can be one of the best in the league. You know, he already is based off of that, but we know that he can be even better, and he works towards that every day.
All right, Paul Posluszny, what do you got in the cup there? You got your name on the cup right there. Is that like a specially prepared?
This is the secret shake right
is
here.
Is it the secret no, shake? I don't even know what's in it. It's a Paul Posluszny shake.
No, just a post-workout shake to help us recover.
Are they tailoring them specifically to like Philadelphia got into that a few years ago.
Yeah.
It seems to be becoming more prevalent around the league. Like they're really tailoring what they need specifically for you. What you drink may not be the same as what Cindric Marks drinks or somebody else, right?
Absolutely. Actually, we're very, very fortunate to have the nutrition staff that we have. They make things specifically for us. They know that I have a hard time keeping weight on, so I have extra calories compared to some other guys. So it's very specific and it's detailed to each player.
Do you get to request the flavor? Can you say, like, I don't like banana?
You do. You do. We're spoiled when it comes to that. We have options.
You know what? It's a good organization to work for in many ways, Paul, and we hope that pays off all your hard work this year with just a bunch of victories. I know you want that as well. Appreciate you stopping by. Won't be the last time we call on you, but go hit the showers, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you, buddy. There he goes. Paul Posluszny, Jaguar middle linebacker here with us on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Always appreciate him popping in and giving his perspective, Tony. I think it's very open and saying, hey, this is one of my biggest jobs this year, not only playing well, but getting Miles Jack ready to play as well as he possibly can. And I'm not a big, you know, go sign a guy in free agency because he can be a coach in the locker room. But if you can add that to the football team, and this team hasn't had a lot of veteran presence that's had a ton of success in recent years because they've gone so young with the roster. Now Paul Posluszny on the other side of 30 years old can give you the value of the experience that he's had playing in the league and how to prepare for the league as well and what to expect. I couldn't think of too many better tutors that Miles Jack could have.
No doubt. No doubt about it. And I'm a little distracted because the news is coming in about Jalen Ramsey.
Well, hit us up.
As we were talking to Paul Posluszny there, he is going to have apparently some kind of surgery on that knee.
Already had
it. But it's only, he's not expected to be out anything beyond 6 weeks. So Gus Bradley said they expect him to be full go by the time this team is getting ready for training camp, which again is kind of the news that we were expecting when it came to Jalen Ramsey, but still, to have it verified, it's good news for the Jaguars when everything is said and done.
Yeah, go ahead, Tyler.
I also have some breaking news for you. Jaguars right tackle Jeremy Parnell sustained a non-displaced fractured hand in OTAs yesterday. He will participate in some individual drills.
What does that mean?
That means...
Now I got to figure out what a non-displaced fractured hand is.
Well, it means like the bone is not like... You know, yeah. Splitting at a joint or, oh, come on. Seriously? Seriously?
I'm sorry.
I mean, man, I'm not mad at you. You got to report the news as it comes in.
Just sucks.
It just, I mean, is there a timetable attached to this, Tyler, or is this the first we're hearing?
That is the first
right
word now. That's from John Osher.
Okay, so I'm assuming Gus addressed this after practice. Blake Bortles speaking after practice today as well, so I'm sure you'll hear from the quarterback and the head coach throughout the course of the afternoon here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. One thing they have, Tony, they've started to stack up is some depth at offensive tackle, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look, you got Jokel, Beecham, Parnell, you've got Wells, you've got Lincoln Bock, all these guys have played tackle in the National Football League, so... if it's a small thing and it's a month or whatever, it's not going to be the biggest thing
in
the world.
Yeah, and they're saying he's going to be able to participate in some individual drills even during OTAs.
It's non-contact,
yeah,
so I mean,
which
if
is
you're right,
a pretty good sign. That gives him, I mean, he's got a couple months.
But you know, if you got a hand injury, you're not lifting, right? You're not doing a whole lot of upper
probably
body
not
lifting, you wouldn't think, and things like that. So it's just, man, enough already. Good news on one front with Jalen Ramsey. Just needs a trim of the meniscus, doesn't need a full repair, and that is the best-case scenario. And so good on that, and not great on Parnell, but again, it's not a long-term issue. It certainly doesn't look like it's a long-term issue, so hopefully that takes care of itself in a short order, and the Jags stop it.
Yeah, right? The storylines keep stacking up.
Unbelievable.
All you people, you just want them to get back on the practice field, you fools.
Right. No, wrap them up and keep them fresh for August and September. All right, well, hey, it is what it is as far as that goes, so let's hope it's a quick return to full health for Jeremy Parnell, but for now, dealing with the non-displaced fracture of his hand, and we'll be able to participate in some individual drills. Jalen Ramsey on the short end of the recovery time, just a trim of the meniscus, not the full repair. So, again, best-case scenario, once you found out that he had a meniscus injury he was dealing with, should be ready to go for training camp is the early word we're hearing right now. All right, that'll do it for us today. Can't get to all the fan feedback today. Maybe we'll take a look at it tomorrow. actually, as we asked you today for your most indispensable backup player on this football team, as we saw yesterday, Luke Bianco go down, or we found out that he's dealing with the torn labrum in the hip that he had to have repaired. So certainly among the more versatile backups that they have on that offensive line. Thanks to Paul Posluszny for just joining us in studio. Thanks to Mo Williams, longtime Jaguar left, or right tackle, I should say, for joining us throughout the first hour. And again, Mo Williams, familyfoundation.org. That is the website if you want to find out more about what he's got going on for high school and college age student athletes. M-O-E for Mo, Mo Williams, familyfoundation.org. That does it for us today. Thanks to Gus Bradley and Dante Fowler Jr. for being kind enough to say some words that we could replay today on the radio as well. We are going to hand things off coming up to the midday chalk. Thanks to the guys drilling above our heads for taking a momentary respite and allowing us to talk unimpeded for the final few minutes of Jaguars today. So for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. The midday chalk is coming up next on 1010XL on 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.